Colin Wright is a true world traveler and adventurer. He's also the author of over 30 books.
Welcome to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast.
Imagine allowing people on the internet to decide where you travel next. That's exactly what Colin does. We get into that a little bit. He travels to an unknown country and stays there for 4 months and lives like a local. And the readers of his blog decide where he goes. How amazing is that? So this episode, we chat about inspiration, motivation, how to create that life that you're dreaming about. And he talks a little bit about not delaying, not waiting for something else to happen to allow you to do it, to just jump in and make it happen right now. So I'm excited to be able to help him share some of his stories and some of the things that he's learned by being able to create these amazing adventures for his life. And that's exactly what I'm all about with the book Just Go, was about jumping in and making things happen right now instead of thinking about it, dreaming about it, and talking about it. You can pick up that book, go to Amazon and type in my name, Chris Ruggiero. You'll find that. And as always, you can grab some gear at Between Dreams Clothing, which helps keep this podcast up and running. Between Dreams, same theme here. You can dream about it, you can think about it, you can talk about it, but what's important is what you do between those dreams. That's where life happens. Between Dreams Clothing is all about that. So check that out if you want to. More about Colin at colin.io, and we're just going to get right into this because there's so much good stuff. Thanks, guys, for listening. Enjoy this. This is really excellent. Colin Wright, a writer, author, traveler, and I would say overall adventurer. So why don't you give, that was my quick little idea of what you do. Why don't you give us a little bit of a better understanding of what exactly your life is all about?
Sure. That was a pretty good summation, but I make my living as an author, and I write both fiction and nonfiction. And then that enables me to live my lifestyle, which involves a whole hell of a lot of travel. That's something I always wanted to do. So about 7 years ago, I figured out a framework that would allow me to travel full time. And typically, I move to a new country every 4 months or so, and my readers of my blog vote on what country I move to. And then I show up and live like a local, and I write. Increasingly, I've been giving a lot of talks at different conferences and schools and businesses as well. But primarily, that's my focus, is I write books, I write a blog. I started a YouTube channel not too long ago, and I've got a podcast coming out next month. But it's largely communication of whatever sort, and then I'm a little bit vehicle agnostic after that.
Cool. And I think most people that heard all of that will get hung up or interested or intrigued or inspired by one particular thing in being you move to a different country every 4 months and it is determined by not you. So talk, I know you just glanced over that as if it was just part of everyday life, but that's something that's kind of intriguing for most of us. So talk a little bit more about how that works or how that came about.
Sure. Yeah, it's funny. You do anything for 7 years and it can become commonplace, even if it's incredibly
yeah.
weird.
Right.
But I mean, the idea initially was that I was 24. I was out living in LA and running a branding studio out there and doing pretty well professionally, but I'd always wanted to travel. And at that point, I had never left the country. I didn't even have my passport when I moved out there. And so I had this kind of dream hanging over my head, and I was looking into the future thinking, oh my God, there's no way I'm going to walk away from this type of money and this type of prestige. I need to stop now. I need to stop and go out and do this thing, or I'm never going to do it. And the shorter version of the story is that I decided to, and I had no idea where to go. And so I started a blog, as confused people tend to do at those types of, at those points in their lives that are pivot points. And I just asked my audience, and I figured everyone in the world has a better idea of where to go than me. So I could do worse than kind of crowdsourcing that answer. And they sent me to Argentina and then New Zealand and then Thailand and Iceland. And so it went so well the first couple times, I decided to keep doing it.
Now, that's like you said, after you do something for a while, it becomes common. But what you just explained is, I travel pretty much. That's what my living is as well. And that still sounds crazy to me. I'll get a little bit about that first thing. So, you know, my big thing when I'm hearing these stories is that initial thought of when we have these, it's easy to say that I want to do this. I can imagine myself saying, I'm going to post on my thing, you know, tell me where you want me to go and I'll go there. But then when it came time to do it, the thought of how terrifying really that is. So I'm not sure what my question is in there, but just that thought of being in that moment of doing it where like you had that idea and I don't know, maybe, you know, I don't know if you had the second thoughts. Did you have second thoughts while doing it? Or like when you're like doing it, I can't believe I'm actually doing this. Just a little bit more. I think that's so amazing that to jump out and do it. Like I said, it's easy to say these things. And I think a lot of people have had that idea like, oh, I'm just going to go live somewhere new. But 99.999, as many nines there as you can have percent will never actually do it. And what's so amazing is that you had the idea and then you actually did it and are doing it.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit morbid, but the thing that did it for me was that I had a moment of realization that I'm going to die. And this is something that, you know, we know. We obviously know this. We do a lot to try to ignore it, but I was recognizing it at that point. And this guy who was a client of mine, he was in his 60s, I think, and this fabulously wealthy dude. He was a billionaire, and he offered to have me come on as his protege. And so I was offered this obscene amount of money and a great deal of power and this like career track that was kind of everything I was hoping for at the time. But then looking at him, he was miserable. He was one of the most miserable human beings I've ever met in my entire life, and had like 7 divorces and all his kids hated him and his health was shit. And so everything about his life, I was looking at it and saying, well, I set this goal of making an obscene amount of money back when I first started my first business at 19. And that was like my yardstick of success at the time. But then at 24, which is a handful of years after that, I realized, man, I can always make money. I know I can do that. I can't get more time. Like I will die. If I'm lucky, I'll have 100 years. Like that's a great number to shoot for. And if I'm going to spend a couple more decades of my life trying to earn money just so I can be miserable when I'm old, it doesn't seem like a great trade-off. And if I wait until I'm in my late 30s or 40s, if I'm lucky, to go travel, I won't be able to do a lot of the things that I can do now. As a young 20-something, I can make a lot more mistakes and bounce back from that. And if I don't take the opportunity now, probably won't get another chance. And so it was that idea of finitude, recognizing my own mortality in that moment that really made the decision not easy exactly, because there was a lot of very practical things I had to consider and then a lot of philosophical things that I had to consider as well. But it made it much easier because it was kind of a choice between how do I spend these few years that I have, this time, which is my only non-renewable resource, the only thing I could never get more of. Am I going to spend it earning a bunch of money in a miserable way for a miserable person so I can be miserable? Or will I go off and do this thing that may not work, but either way will be a pretty good life experience? And so looking at it that way, the math is a lot clearer.
Yeah. Yeah, and as you say that, it's that's a great. It just becomes clear of almost it makes it an easy decision to jump in and make it happen.
Right.
Even as you do say that, I know with just in doing anything, whether it's big or small, you have those ideas. Now you're at the point where you've convinced yourself that it's worth doing. Now it's time to actually do it. What about some challenges once you're in? Now you committed to it. You're doing it. You're doing your first trip. And what happens? You know, what's that like? That first day. You arrive.
Oh God, it's confusing. So confusing. Like I said, I'd never left the country. So I spent most of my life in Missouri, and then I lived a few years in LA and a few years of my childhood in San Francisco. But like I was this kid from the sticks, and I was fairly sophisticated in terms of business, and I did really well in school, but those are very organized institutions, very organized, understood cultures. And just to go out into the world in a place that's completely unregulated in the sense that academia and business are regulated, and to go off and to basically learn everything firsthand, like to learn by making mistakes. Oh, it's really good for one's sense of humility because everything those first couple of weeks, and still today, 7 years later, I do it the same way. You're always the dumbest person in the room. Like every child around you knows more about what's happening around you than you do. And so you go into the grocery store and you don't know what's milk and what's poison. And so you literally are just this incredibly ignorant person trying to learn. And so you eventually learn to watch and to ask questions and just to be very brazen about your ignorance. But coming from the business world and coming from the academic world too, you're not supposed to admit ignorance. You're supposed to pretend that you know more than everybody else. And adjusting to that was probably the hardest part. Adjusting to that system of learning, of stumbling and getting back up and stumbling and getting back up, that kind of defined the last 7 years for me.
Yeah, it's been a kind of a theme with people I've been talking to of, and this kind of relates into that, of this moment of hitting kind of the bottom, you know, in a way, rock bottom, not exactly what you were saying there, but almost like admitting that this is an unknown and uncertain. So all I have to do is figure it out. Like I have nothing to lose. So I just have to figure it out. Like, I'm here.
Yeah.
I'll acknowledge that I don't maybe don't know what to do next or not sure what to do next. So that, you know, it's easy in those moments where you're like, I just want to go home or whatever you're doing, or quit or not do this or stop, you know, creating this thing or whatever I'm doing. But then you think about where, you know, in that moment of just, like I said, you have almost, not that you have nothing to lose, but you have nowhere to go but up. So make it happen.
Yeah. Exactly. It's so liberating to be able to admit your own ignorance in a lot of ways. It's the type of thing that you don't realize is impressive until you see it a couple of times. And until you see somebody, you take a look at somebody that you respect and realize the impressive thing is not that they know everything. The impressive thing is that they're willing to learn and to be convinced, and that they're willing to ask questions and willing to change their opinion, usually too. The most impressive person in the room is typically not the person who says, I know everything, I have nothing to learn here. They're the person that they know a lot of things because they are willing to continuously learn and to continuously ask questions and change direction completely. And so that's what it's been for me, is kind of moving more in that direction rather than trying to act as if I know everything, rather than trying to act as if I'm the master at things, ensuring that I'm always the amateur at everything that I do. I'm always willing to learn and always willing to stay open, because those are the traits that I see in the people who really impress me. And it's the type of thing that allows you to go into these type of situations as a student, as opposed to going in and saying, well, there's nothing to learn here, and just going to Starbucks in, you know, this unfamiliar place.
Right. That's a hit on that one thing of, in that moment of acknowledging that you're the student and you have a lot to learn. And you said something in there about those are the people that you look up to, are the people who kind of have that sense of still not coming into the room and thinking that they know everything. So there's something cool in there that in the process of admitting that you are the student and not the master, now you kind of, in a way, become the master to other people who are watching you, because they see, you know, it's like that. And that's, I think, something that's really important, in that sometimes when we want to try to dominate and know everything and be this ultimate thing. And, you know, I have it with, you know, doing this podcast and doing my live show. There's so many times when I'm like, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. Like, I wish somebody would tell me what to do. Like, I don't know what, like, how to do this thing, or whether it's like a tech thing or whatever. And then I'll have somebody come up to me and be like, dude, I listened to that episode of your podcast, and like, that was exactly what I needed to hear. Then I was like, oh, I don't need to know how to do everything. It was like, if I do what I do know how to do right now, it's like, be curious for me. It's be curious about how other people are living interesting lives. That's mm-hmm. That's enough. So the yeah. point of that was, you don't need to be the master. Sometimes it's more important to be curious, be the student. And in doing that, again, like I said before, I think in doing that, you, without realizing it, become a master. And, you know, I don't think you ever become the master of right. anything, but you work your way up where, you know, there's going to be people who are looking to you. I mean, I know you have, how many people are looking up to you and kind of modeling what they want to do with their life of what you've been able to accomplish and how you've been able to live. It's amazing and inspiring for countless people. So
That's intimidating in a lot of ways. But I think just like with anything, looking at it as like learning in public as opposed to being masterful at something, learning in public is a much easier thing to commit to and feel good about, because then you're not too hard on yourself if you're not the expert on everything. And like you said, the way that I tend to look at it is that mastery, it's like perfection. It's not a destination. It's a journey. It's something that you'll never reach the end of. And as long as you look at it in that way, then you can feel good about where you are now and not berate yourself for not being where you want to be, because you know you'll be there. And then once you get there, you'll see that there's more. It's like reaching a horizon. You know, if you look at mastery as a horizon that you need to breach, well, once you climb to the top of that mountain, you look out in the distance, you just see three new horizons. Every time you learn something and reach a new milestone, you see that there's more that you didn't know. And so people who declare themselves to be masters or decide that they are acting, you know, as if they don't recognize that there's more horizons. They're looking at the mountains on the horizon from where they're standing now and saying, okay, I've seen this. I know everything there is to know. Whereas those who allow themselves to keep growing tend to be the ones that travel further and see more and recognize how little they know, because they know enough to know how little they know.
Love it. It's really great. Now, in knowing and in acknowledging this, that there is no ultimate, there is no actual top of that mountain peak. There is no ultimate horizon. As we approach one horizon, we are revealed an infinite amount of new ones. I love that kind of thought. So acknowledging that and knowing that there is no, you know, ultimate goal or ultimate destination, what is your, for you, what you're doing right now, what is your, you know, goal? What is your ideal outcome? And like I said, kind of balancing this of having a horizon that you're looking at currently, but knowing that that will change. Where are you at in this moment? Like, what do you want? I guess, what do you want people to remember you by? Or what do you want to kind of like create that will, you know, be bigger than you as just a person?
There's a lot of different
questions in there, but
there's a lot of different answers to that. But in general, I mean, where I'm at right now, most of what I'm exploring and experimenting with, and most of the goals that I have, I set very short-term goals typically, because I don't know how my priorities will change based on what I learn and experience. But most of my goals right now are predicated around different modes of communication and different platforms. And I write books and I write my blog, and I've been learning to do more video stuff, and I've been learning to do more audio stuff, and I've been in TV talks for what seems like years and years and years. That industry moves at a glacial pace. But all of these things, including the speaking in public, is the idea is to talk to more people, to have more conversations. And that helps me share what I am learning, again, learning in public, but it also helps me learn from the people that I then interact with and make connections with. And everything that I do, in a lot of ways, it's not about trying to create a book that everybody will read for hundreds of years in the future. Like, I don't think anything I could write would be necessarily useful for 100 years in the future. That'd be cool, but I don't know if that would ever happen. It's more about kind of being able to pursue whatever I think is interesting. And then if I can create value as a byproduct of going out and just living a happy, interested, curious life, that's fantastic. But the main priority really is trying to keep growing myself and to do it in such a way that I'm able to then create dividends as a byproduct. And so if for me to grow as an individual and to learn what I want to learn and to have the excuse to go do what I want to do and have these experiences, if during that process, I can write a blog about it, which helps me figure out what I think on a topic, but also share what it is that I'm learning and doing with other people who might want to do the same, that creates kind of a beneficial cycle where it creates more value as a byproduct of what I'm already doing for people other than me. But then maybe they'll share value with me in the future too, maybe directly with buying a book, which helps me sustain my lifestyle, or indirectly in longer term because they do something or know something that I don't know and then share it with me. So it's kind of creating this ecosystem, I guess, in a way, to put it in a very, very broad term. I like that this is a self-perpetuating machine, and it's something that isn't necessarily based on one great big trophy that I'm aspiring to. It's more a continuous thing that I hopefully can keep up in one way or another, even if it changes dramatically in the specifics along the way, to keep it up for one way or another for my entire life.
Yeah, that's cool. I like the, there was something in there that really struck me of the, when you go out and experience something, and if you can create a byproduct of that, of, you know, writing a book or inspiring a thought or writing a blog post, that is kind of the bonus. And I think a lot of people now have this thing of, if they write a blog or make YouTube videos or host a podcast or whatever their outlet is, they kind of see that as the thing. And life around that kind of like, okay, you know, instead of, you know, saying, okay, today I'm going to go out and try to like find, like force this blog post out about me being adventurous or going out and living life. Like, and then you know, how many of these internet people that are, you know, and you read it and you're just like, okay, like, but it doesn't feel like you're actually, it feels like you're writing about this, but not actually doing it.
Right. Yeah. It is remarkable how much of the internet is content. And that's not necessarily a bad word, but ideally content is not something that happens when you say, I'm going to start a blog. Now, what do I write about? Ideally, you say, here's what I want to do. Here's how I want to live. Here's something that I think is important. Now, how can I best share that with the people I think need to hear it or need to see it or who I think would gain value from it? And in some cases, maybe it won't be a blog. Maybe you'll think, oh, I'll start a blog. But then you discover that that's not the right way to reach people. Ideally, in business, they call it the unique value proposition. It's something that you do better than other people, something that you can do as a byproduct of your lifestyle, something that it would be difficult for other people to do as well as you or compete with you in doing. And if you can just be yourself, if you can just be yourself and pursue things that you think are interesting and live your life the best way that you know how, and then your unique value proposition is you being you. Nobody can be a better you than you. Figure out how to share what you learn or to share what value you have with other people. And whatever vehicle happens to make the most sense for that. And it may be a blog, it may be a YouTube video, it may be just talking with friends over a beer. Like, there's no wrong way to do it. And if you force yourself into a box, you're kind of, it's like a cookie cutter. You know, you've got all of these rough edges, and those rough edges are what make you you. And maybe some of them, you'll be a better version of yourself if you sand them down a little to streamline. But some of them you should sharpen. You should sure as hell sharpen some of those things, because that's you. Otherwise, you're the same shape as everybody else. And a lot of these mechanisms of communication, unfortunately, are causing people to sand down everything, so that they all look alike and every blog is indistinguishable from every other blog and everybody's YouTubing about the same thing. And if that really makes you happy, cool, go for it. But if you're really, really trying to make some kind of waves and to create value for other people in addition to yourself, usually you should let the content, the value, the lifestyle drive what vehicle you use rather than the other way around.
And that's amazing thoughts there, and how freeing that is for people of, because that is, I know, I mean, it's for me is for me, I'll speak for myself as I like to try to do is there's so many times when I'm sitting like thinking, oh, what kind of video can I make? What kind of post can I make? And I fall into that, that, as you said, kind of that content trap rather than life. Let life happen and be free. Try this. Cool. Talk to a camera today and see what happens. You know, how much better is that video going to be than me scripting out something and, or whatever. For me, you know, some people have, you know, it's whatever works for people, but you know, I think I fall into the trap of trying to create content for the sake of trying to create content. And then I'm not living my life that day. I'm sitting inside, like thinking about how I can create something instead of going outside and going for a hike or something. And
yeah. Yeah. And that's frankly the presumed business wisdom. That's the common sense, you know, within the marketing world, the business world, the media world, on a broad scale. And it's unfortunate because what we're trying to accomplish, if you look at the big picture, when we're looking at producing content, what we're trying to do is create a sustainable income, create a certain notoriety. We're trying to create opportunities for ourselves so that we can live the life that we want to live. But we're sacrificing the life that we want to live in order to produce these things. And if we flip that funnel, you know, if we make living the life that we want to live an integral part of that, then we're able to generate more opportunities. You know, I make my living off of my books and I give talks and that adds a little additional too. But I wanted to make sure that the first core component of everything that I did was living that life first, so that then I didn't have to go try to do that later after I've earned a bunch of money, which would presumably allow me to do that. I didn't want to sell off my car to get gas money, you know? And unfortunately, that's what we're encouraged to do. We're supposed to give up the thing that we want in order to do the things that might someday let us get the thing that we want. Flip that funnel, you know? Flip it as much as you can. And it takes a little bit more work. And it's not as easy to explain you as a whole round individual with so many different components to your character than to just say, I'm going to own the keyword of magician or a juggler or something like that. Huh. But if you put in the effort and you do it that way, one, nobody can compete with you because nobody's a better you than you. And two, you've already got everything that you want. Then it's just a matter of scaling it. It's a matter of doing it more and earning more money or getting more opportunities or more prestige and making that an addition to having, an addition to the thing that you already have and enjoy, which is the lifestyle that you want to live.
Great. I don't have anything to add to that statement because it was just good. So I'll let that just linger in people's minds. And I wanted to kind of touch on the, I think we've got a great kind of philosophy into your mind and your mindset and why you've created this world for yourself. But I also wanted to get into kind of the, not too much into the business stuff, but kind of into this thing of, you know, a lot of people that are listening are going to say, sure, that sounds great for him, but I could never do that because I have bills to pay, or they're going to come up with some excuse. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think you know, and I know, as good as anyone, that sometimes it looks easier or looks more glamorous than it is, but there's a lot of hard work that goes into having a fun, what looks like a fun lifestyle. it's probably more work. It's definitely more work than going to work. What, you know, that thing that we've kind of tried to avoid. So talk about, I know you, with your books, and how many books do you have out, first of all? A lot.
Oh, gosh, 30-something, 34, 35?
You have so many that you don't even know. it's so cool to have, and just to create that. And, oh, here's like something that I just thought about of like, if you went out and said, I'm going to write 30 books, most people would say, well, that's like impossible. Like in your whole life, that feels impossible. and you've done it. But it's I think, a product of you, as you said, kind of flipping this thing of, you know, living first and then just letting things flow out of that. Like, I think you would agree with that. If you said a handful of years ago, I'm going to write 30 books, like most people would say, how, like where I'm going to be hung up on these ideas, but instead you kind of lived and allow these things to flow out of you. And that, which I wanted to get into is the asymmetrical press company, and publishing and self-publishing. And I wanted to go into that world a little bit of creating these opportunities. Now you've lived, create the content, but that's still, you know, in our world, kind of not enough. You need to still have this business world and kind of think about that as well. And you've created your own thing of the common thing with most people that I talk to is this thing of eliminating the need to ask for permission from other people. And that's something that you're doing for yourself is, you know, putting out the stuff for yourself without the permission of the quote gatekeepers. Talk a little bit about what you are doing with that work of now that you have the content and kind of distributing, publishing, and getting things out there. And I think everyone wants to write a book about their experience and what they've experienced. And again, 99.9% of people don't do it. And we have no reason. We have very little reason at this point. You know, 5 years ago, there was almost an argument that, oh, this is hard. I think every day that passes now, that argument goes away a little bit more and more. So maybe talk about, I'll let you kind of let you go with where you want to go with it. Talk about the publishing platform as you've kind of created for yourself. And then maybe even talk about, give something to people that want to do that of their own, of how, what advice you have for somebody that has an idea that wants to go out and is stuck on this thing of, you know, in the old way of thinking, like that I want to, you know, to find a publisher to allow me to write this book.
Right. So two foundational things to that. First, one is that a lot of what allowed me to do what I did 7 years ago and continues to allow me to do what I do today is the concept of minimalism, which doesn't inherently mean owning very little. It just means owning exactly the things that add to your life and nothing more than that. And there's a trap in the compulsory consumption world that we live in where you need to own the right things in order to feel big or to feel like you've accomplished something or to feel that you're successful or to feel that you're worth something. And getting out of that is important because otherwise your expenses are going to be massive and a lot of what you're spending money on is not going to be something that adds anything good to your life. It's just going to be things you feel you have to buy because somebody else thinks that you should. So getting away from that was vital and recognizing that if I spent more of my time, money, and resources and energy on the things that were actually important, then I didn't need to spend so much, but I also didn't have to work so hard. So I could afford to fail for a while and not go broke. So that was an important component, especially at the beginning, but continues to be important today because it allows me to take a whole lot of risks. I am not in too much trouble if something I try doesn't work out because my expenses are quite low because I only spend on the things that I think are really important. Two, my approach to business in general and my approach to just making money because I tend to look at my entire lifestyle in a way as kind of a business. That's the entrepreneur in me that still comes out. I tend to look at things as being sustainable. So rather than looking at business as something like the Silicon Valley version of it, where you build a minimum viable product and then get somebody else to invest in it, and then you're kind of owned by them, but they've given you a bunch of money, so you're flush overnight with money. I look at it from the bootstrapping perspective, where you don't spend more than you have, you don't go into debt if you can avoid it, you pay off any debts that you have, and you are careful with your expenses. And so for me, a lot of what enables this lifestyle and a lot of other people who don't enjoy traveling or who otherwise have very different lifestyles than me and very different business models do it the same way, where you just don't spend what you don't have. You do what you can to amplify what you do have so that you increase your earning potential over time. And then you base your lifestyle around the type of work that you want to do. And for me, publishing and writing is that. And so you look at the amount of work that I've produced, it seems kind of crazy looking at it through the lens of operating in that normal 9-to-5, forcing yourself to sit at a desk when you don't want to type of lifestyle. But for me, if I wasn't earning a dime off of these books, I would still be doing it. It took me quite a while. I still don't earn anything from the blog. It's a thing that I do for free. But it's still something that I do and I've done for 7 years and I love the hell out of it. And so if you can find something that you truly enjoy or that you think you might enjoy and then can figure out how to make money off of it without ruining it for yourself, then it doesn't seem so crazy to have a crazy output because it's something that you do every day anyway. It's something that you do for fun. And so your expenses kind of drop in terms of fun. You don't feel the need to go off and go clubbing all the time or to spend crazy amounts of money to convince yourself that the work you're doing is worthwhile because it's already worthwhile. Like you get a lot of value just from the process of doing that work. But then if you look at your lifestyle in that way, as kind of a business endeavor as well, then a lot of your expenses and your the income that you generate fits in with your lifestyle better. For me, everything that I do in terms of travel, in terms of learning, in terms of just sitting around and reading and geeking out and learning new things and trying new things, that all feeds back into the work that I do. These are all things that I'm learning and I could write about, and that if I geek out and learn in public, then it helps everything else that I do. So the lifestyle and the business then ties together. And so the income kind of, as long as you're smart with it and set up a few things that does not get in the way and is not douchebaggy by your own standards of marketing and doing business, then it all fits together really well. And you don't even realize that you're doing business anymore. It just seems like another aspect of your lifestyle. And so Asymmetrical Press was kind of a natural extension of that. It was me finding two other guys, Josh and Ryan from The Minimalists, who had the same philosophy or very similar philosophy as I did in terms of business, in terms of making it a part of our lifestyle, doing things that we love, and then figuring out how to make a living off of that rather than the other way around. And not doing business with assholes and a bunch of other things that, you know, after doing business in the conventional sense for so many years, we didn't want to be miserable working anymore. And we wanted to figure out, even if we didn't make as much money as before, how to sustain the lifestyles that we wanted to live by doing work that we enjoyed and surrounding ourselves with people that we liked. And Asymmetrical Press was the result of that, where we took what we were doing for ourselves and scaled it a bit so that we could afford to invest in other people who wanted to create the type of work that they wanted to see in the world.
Yeah, it's just, for me, the thought of all this is just amazing that you're doing it and it's working.
I'm glad it worked too. I was a little shocked at first because, you know, we're taught that it's supposed to go this one way. You're supposed to put money first, put business first, put security first, and then maybe go off and live the life that you want at some point when you're, you know, 60. So it wasn't a sure thing. I'm just as in some ways surprised and thrilled as anybody else that it ended up working and not blowing up in my face. But like you mentioned before, actually, what you alluded to is that it's a lot easier to like publish now than it's ever been before. Mm-hmm. Well, that extends to almost every type of media, almost every type of job. If you're willing to rethink things and to break the model that's existed since the 40s, I would say the second industrial revolution, but definitely since the microprocessor revolution, because of what we can do now, because of the technology that is available, if you can really honestly sit down with what you want to do, what you value, the things that matter to you, and pick it apart and say, what are my expenses? How do I want this to be compared to how it is now? And could I convince enough other people that that's the way it should be too? Then you can do almost anything. There's no right or wrong answer. Publishing is definitely a wild west right now where there's no right answers. But I would argue that it's the same case with myriad other industries. And as long as you are, I would say, brazen enough to go off and say that you might be able to figure out a better answer than has been on the table for decades, then I think you could build any type of lifestyle and any type of work-life balance that you might want to build.
Yeah. Yeah. And these opportunities, you know, anyone that's looking for these opportunities or in any way complaining that things are a challenge. I think they need to think about how hard things were, like you said, or like I said, five.
Well, there's still a challenge.
Oh yeah.
Like it's still a hell of a lot of work. It's just, it is so much easier now. And the biggest challenge actually in my mind is changing your mind, changing your perspective on it. Because we have every force in our life, very well-meaning forces, but every force, education and our work experience and our families and friends, or the media, like everything is telling us that this is the way things should be. And to force yourself out of lockstep and to say, but maybe not, is probably the hardest part of the process. It's easy once you can get yourself out of that, or relatively easy compared to how it was even 5-10 years ago. But that is no small task. And some of us like me kind of luck into it where we're just at the right place, right time to have that thought and do something about it. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot harder for a lot of other people who are in nice, stable situations and have no real reason to take that risk, or they don't think they do because they don't know what's on the other side. And so taking that first step really, really is the hardest part, even though it seems like such a mundane thing after the fact.
Yeah, right. So this has been a kind of good summary for the past probably half hour of what you've been saying is kind of the answer to my next question, but I'll let you kind of tie it up into a nice package for people, somebody who is thinking about doing something. Whether it be whatever it may be, maybe not as big as quitting their job and traveling to unknown countries, whatever it is, or somebody, you know, I have a lot of performer people who listen to this, and you know, the choices that, and you said that it's not easy. What all of us are doing, there's challenges at whatever level we're choosing to live our life. What do you have for just a nice package, take home message for people who are at whatever level they are, if they're thinking about starting, if they're starting, or if they've started and thinking about quitting? what do you have to tell them? And I think the ultimate piece for it would be to keep going. You know, persistence is going to pay off, and don't quit because it becomes a little bit of a challenge, or you hit a plateau, or you hit a roadblock, or you dip down, whatever it may be. Somebody that comes to you looking for advice, you know, they're feeling a little down and they need something, what do you tell them?
I say that definitely it will be a lot of work. You will work your ass off in a way that you never thought possible before, but you'll enjoy the work. That's the difference, is that you will work harder than you ever did before, but you probably won't see most of what you do as work. So it's worth getting there. But the thing to remember when you first hit that point and it just seems like work, or it seems impossible, or it seems like too much work to step away from the cozy or relatively cozy thing that you've got going now. It's actually a thesis statement of one of my books, is that you have exactly one life in which to do everything you'll ever do. Just one. And everything you'll ever do in life can only fit within that one life. You don't get a do-over. You don't get any more time after that. Every second you spend doing something that you don't enjoy is a second you'll never get back. And act accordingly. You know, that what you do as a result of that information will be different for every single person. And there's no right or wrong way to do it. But for you, wherever you happen to be right now, and whatever step you happen to be at, and wherever you want to be, recognizing that finitude and recognizing that, in my case, the exact thought that I had was, I'll never get my 20s back. If I give up my 20s for doing all this crap that I don't want to do, that I don't find value in, I'll never get my 20s back. And even if I earn a bunch of money doing the things that I don't want to do, my 20s are gone. I'm giving up something finite. The only non-renewable resource that I have, I'll be giving up. And so recognize that. Recognize it and let your response to that guide you. And that will tell you what's worth doing and what's not worth doing.
One life to do everything you'll ever do. I think that just needs to soak in a little bit to all of our minds and our souls deeply, because that is one sentence that pretty much just sums up everything that this show is all about, and a lot of the work that I'm doing is all about, to make things happen in your life. Again, you can think about things and dream about things, but what it comes down to is what you do between those dreams and how you make life happen. So, immense thank you to Colin for joining me and sharing his just wealth of knowledge that has come from actual real life experience and actually living and doing this. And as I said at the beginning, and he mentioned he has over 30 books that you can get a peek into his thoughts and his mind. And he has his blog where he writes about all of his travels and adventures and his different things. That's Colin.io, Colin.io. You can find all of his information there, or type in his name, Colin Wright, Wright, into Amazon, and all of his stuff will come up. So I encourage you to check out more of his stuff if you like it. If there was anything in this episode that you thought was amazing that someone else could benefit from, please share it with them. Please leave a comment, rating, or review on iTunes or the podcast app or wherever you are listening. Let's help get this word out about the show for other people to hear it. But mostly, thank you, wherever you are, for listening and being a part of this thing that we are creating. Thank you for listening to my show, and see you soon. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast.